I really don't think it's about loyalty. I think it's just about the best situation for myself, and that's what I think it is. Brought to you by Fantrax. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you are watching this show live on YouTube, you can tweet at me and interact with the show by tweeting at redrock_beeble. You know the Twitter handle by now. Even if you're not watching it live, you can always tweet at me at that Twitter handle. So get amongst it. If you're not on Twitter, you can find me on Facebook, facebook.com/redrockbasketball as well, and interact with any of the posts that go up there. Leave comments and chat to me over there as well. You know that this show is brought to you, of course, by Basketball Monster, the best place to find your fantasy tools for daily and season-long leagues, projections, trade analysis, all that sort of stuff. You know about Basketball Monster, exclusive content, exclusive articles as well. It's also brought to you by Fantrax, which is the number one place to host your fantasy league, whether it's basketball, whether it's football, whether it's baseball. You could start a baseball league now on Fantrax, which I reckon you can't do on some of the other sites. They have everything that you... Fantrax is hosting our Red Rock Real Salary Cap League, which I've been overwhelmed with the amount of applications. I have currently got 2 spots left. I've currently got about 10 or 12 applications to fill those 2 spots. It doesn't mean it's too late for you to send in your applications. I'm going to be closing off those 2 spots at the end of the week. It's going to leave them with some pretty tough decisions. Some of the applications that came in that got spots were fantastic. Sean sent in one, a 3 PDF of building plans for him setting up a league or entering the league, championship trophies on blueprints. Elliot, another one, sent in some great Michael Bolton pictures and Stephen A. Smith pictures saying
percentages
and just really, you know, great stuff. Super logos as well. I really love the logos you put together. I'm going to have to get in contact with you about collaborating for some new logo work for the show, but really loved what you did there. But it isn't too late. This is a 30-team Dynasty League. It's a $50 entry into this league every season. Every team that makes the playoffs gets some sort of a payout. And what it is, you have to build your team using the real salary cap. So the pencil Harrison Barnes, if he gets $25 million, he costs you $25 million in this fantasy league. Carl Anthony Towns cost you $4 million until he gets his extension in 3 years' time, and then he costs you $25 million. And you've got to balance it all under the real NBA salary cap. 13 players per team, 30 teams, 5 starters. It's basically modeling the NBA. It's going to be a real tough draft because it's not going to be pick the best player. It's going to be about getting value as well. So really looking forward to that. Myself is in it. Aaron Brewski is in it, and Mark Roberts. We are the three... more well-known people who do fantasy analysis for a living. So the three of us are in that league as well. So if you want to get involved there, please do. Of course, I'm going to be having a stack of redraft leagues, which will be free to enter, which I'll announce probably after Summer League for entries into those. But keep an ear out for those, or keep an eye out on Twitter and Facebook for all of those leagues. But if you still do want to get into this one, the door hasn't closed. It's pretty close. It is a sliver of light at the door. There's 2 spots left. So looking forward to seeing your entries and seeing if you can snag one of those last couple of spots. Speaking of Michael Bolton,
let's get to it.
Before we get into today's podcast, I'll just set out what we're doing over the next couple of shows. The next podcast will be in a couple of days' time. I'll be joined by Matt Smith, who you know from Basketball Monster and of this podcast. Obviously, Matt will be joining me. We're going to be talking. Well, Matt's going to give some of his thoughts on the draft because he wasn't able to join me for the draft review show the other day. And then we're also going to be discussing players who finished outside the top 100 last season who have got a shot to challenge for the top 50. So there's always a couple of players who do this, and trying to predict it is tough. And I'll go through a little bit of that in this episode as well. But that's what we'll be talking about, potential breakout type players. Again, real early in the process, but that's what we'll be doing. That'll be on the eve of free agency. And then at the start of next week, I'll be joined by Aaron Brewski, and we'll go through the first wave of free agency signings. Probably do a second free agency show. Most likely, I haven't spoken to Kyle, but I'll probably be getting Kyle McEwen on to do the second wave of free agency signings, and then I'll be jetting off to the States. So there'll be probably some sort of a break-in transmission. Whether I'm still undecided about what I do with my equipment taking it over there. We'll see. Oh, I might do it and record some pods there. I might have a couple of weeks break and then do some podcasts when I come back. We'll see. That is still up in the air. at this point. This podcast, what I'm doing, I'm looking at players who are heading into their fourth season in the NBA. So basically, it's the class of 2013, the 2013 draft class. All those, not all, majority of those players are heading into their fourth season. And they will be due, or they'll be eligible for rookie extensions prior to October, but then they'll be heading into restricted free agency at the end of this season, and that's when a lot of players take significant jumps in their play. There are players who don't. We saw Festus Ezeli this season. We saw the pencil himself. He didn't have a big jump forward, but a lot of players heading into that fourth season have a real jump in their production. And they can be candidates for those guys who are outside the top 150 who jump inside to the top 60 or top 50. So I'll go through these players. A lot of it is opportunity-based, but sometimes when they get to their fourth season, they become that much better and that much improved that they force an opportunity. They force the team. They have to play them. And we'll see that with some of these players and some interesting numbers that I've seen with some of these guys in this draft class. If you remember, the 2013 draft class was widely criticized as being piss poor. Now, we talk about this draft class being poor. I think it's got a lot of depth, this class. But 2013 was the draft class where Michael Carter-Williams won Rookie of the Year. And lots of people, this is the worst draft class ever. Horrible, horrible. But you go back on it, there's always some gems. There's always some studs. There is some legit top 10 potential players or actual players in this draft class. It just wasn't apparent at the time, and the top of the draft didn't necessarily go to plan. But there's, you could make the argument, four or five guys who are going to be perennial top 20 players in fantasy basketball circles from this draft, and that's not, it's a pretty bloody good return if you ask me, especially when the number one draft pick, Anthony Bennett, is currently, who knows what he's doing, potentially, I think he had a tryout with the Brooklyn Nets, he's looking for a team. So there's lots of, you can bag on a draft class, and plenty of people did. At the end of that season, people, this rookie class, they're all terrible. But majority of those players had significant injuries in their first season, and they started to come on in the second year. And you get, again, we'll go through these guys now, but there's some legit talent here, and there's some legit players who are key cogs on fantasy rosters and key cogs on their real-life NBA teams as well. What I did is I went to Basketball Reference, I brought up all the players drafted in 2013 and sorted them by their box score plus minus for the season. Now, some of these players, it isn't their fourth season for a couple of reasons. They were either second round draft choices and they weren't mandated to sign a fourth, that's not true. It's not the end of their rookie contract for some of them. It's the fourth season for a lot of them. But there are players who stayed overseas, and it might be their third season. It might be their second season. So they're guys I'll try and exclude out of this list, but this is for all the players who were basically drafted in 2013. If everything went to plan, this is their fourth season coming up. It is likely the end of their rookie contract. Remember, there are 60 players drafted in a draft. There's always the undrafted guys as well. Last season, only 39 of those players played a game in the NBA, and that's including some players... No, it's all right. That's everyone who was drafted. So 21 players out of those 60 guys did not play. And some of them have never played in this draft. And if we go through the draft, there is, from the first round, we're still missing one player who hasn't played, Livio Jean-Charles, who is coming across for the San Antonio Spurs. We've got Alex Abrines for the Thunder, a shooting guard, who I'm really excited to see him come across. Probably less so now that Victor Oladipo is in Oklahoma, but Alex Abrines hasn't played. Pierre Jackson, yet to play a game. Marko Todorovic from Montenegro. Romero Osby, Colton Iverson, Arsalan Kazemi, Alex Oriaki, who's been traded about three times, I think. Deshaun Thomas, Bojan Dubljevic, and Giannis Timmer. They're the players who we've yet to see out of this draft set foot on an NBA court. So again, I went through and looked at these players, box score plus minus, to see who the top player was last season, and that's sort of the order I'm going to go through them. Again, I'm not going to cover all 39 of these guys, because you probably don't want to hear me prattling on for 2 hours talking about players drafted in 2013, but I'll highlight the main ones and highlight some things that I might think about this guy moving forward. The player that he was universally derided as having a real disappointing season, and he was disappointing, and he was a player that I was really down on heading into the season. I warned people against drafting him in the early to middle second round. I said, it's not going to go well for you. I was laughed at in many spots. I was poo-pooed. I was, this guy is a dick. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And the player I'm talking about is Rudy Gobert. If you picked him at pick 13, at pick 12, at pick 14, at pick 15, you lost out. and it's not your own fault. I can understand why you did. I was really cautious about it, and he struggled. But in terms of the overall class, he had the best box score plus minus because he was still impactful. He was still a really impactful defender. He just didn't do it fantasy-wise. He got only 9 points a game, 11 boards, 0.7 steals, 2.2 blocks, 56 from the field, but his free throw percentage down at 57 was a real concern, especially given the amount of attempts he had per game, which was 4.6, and that really dropped him down. If you look at what Gobert did, people were expecting to draft him, or they did draft him at 13 or 14. He was the 67th ranked player in NICAT leagues and 68th in 8CAT. The knee injury didn't help, but this is on a per game basis, but pre-All-Star, he was 25th. Post-All-Star, 170th. So he really did struggle down the stretch. Now, Gobert, you're not going to be taking him in the second round, and that's probably going to be good for your perception of him because you're going to get him as a steal. So if you're looking to pick him in the 40s or 50s, I reckon there's a big chance that Gobert bounces back. But the free throws will always remain a concern to me until he shows that they're not. And he hasn't done that yet, and he takes quite a large volume of free throw attempts. He doesn't hit enough, and he almost relegates himself to being a punt player. He's almost a player who I scratch off completely for Roto, and he almost forces you into a punt free throw. Not completely, but he almost forces you into that. But I think that he could be a bit of a steal. He's not going to be a player that's taking a jump up into the tens. I don't think he's going to be that high, but we could comfortably find himself inside the top 25 next season, and there is pretty much, well, I wouldn't take him inside the top 25, and there's going to be zero chance you need to take him in the top 25. He'll slide outside the top 40. He might slide outside the top 50. So there's a few things to bear in mind there. But Gobert, for as much as you drafted him, you were like, what is this, what a waste of a pick. His season wasn't bad. It wasn't terrible. There was still some pretty interesting stuff. And this is really going to be his second season as a starter. He started the post-All-Star of his second year, barely played in his first year, started his full third year, and now he's heading into his fourth season. This could be a monster outing for Gobert. So he is a real huge chance to perhaps crack the top 20 again or perhaps be a top 25 player. So keep an eye on, I know you will be, but just don't be too dissuaded from what we saw from Gobert last season. Probably a surprise to many is the player who is second on box score plus minus for this group of players, and that is Mason Plumlee in Portland. Now, his fantasy ranks weren't overly appealing, 130th in 9CAT leagues, 110th in 8CAT, but he was impressive in the second half of the season. He turned into Joakim Noah in the playoffs, scoring 2 points and getting 10 assists and 10 rebounds. The Blazers are looking to improve that center position, so that means you've got to be a little bit cautious of what you expect from him. He only played 25 minutes a game. I would love to have seen him get 30 minutes a game and really start to be a fantasy factor and be a comfortable top 100 player. He was a 9.7.7 rebound guy with 0.8 steals, 1 block, 52%, and hit 64% of his free throws. So he's not quite a punt free throw guy, but he is pretty close to it. So he's a guy, again, you have to be careful with that. Not quite to the level of Gobert, but he's had seasons where he's been much worse than Gobert in that area. So he is he's a player, but it's going to depend on what the Blazers do in free agency, whether they get Dwight, whether they go with Yamahimi, Bismack Biyombo, Hassan Whiteside, any of these number of players they're looking at. But if they don't bring anyone back, then Plumlee is going to be good for a late round center. He's a player who should be able to, I imagine he gets more than 25 minutes, and he should be able to sneak himself inside the top 100. And I don't think he really goes to the top 50, but he's shown enough flashes to me. He's shown enough flashes in terms of playmaking and a slight improvement in his rim protection that he could become a player who takes a 20 or 30 spot jump. So an interesting guy. Third in box score plus minus is Bebe Nogueira, but he is a player who isn't heading into his fourth season. Not going to really talk too much about him. I talked about him a fair bit on the Raptors podcast. I thought he was a real chance to become the backup center, but now they did draft Jakob Poeltl, so it's going to be between Poeltl and him. But I would say that Bebe has the upper hand there to be the majority primary backup, given his really good rim protection and development he's had over the last couple of seasons. So he is going to be more of a deeper league target, but it's going to take a Jonas Valanciunas injury for Bebe to really challenge standard leagues. But he doesn't need to play 32 minutes to be a standard league challenger. He only needs to get 25 minutes a night because of the insane field goal percentage and block numbers that he can get to impact those leagues. you're probably wondering when I'm going to get to this guy, and it is now. It's Giannis Antetokounmpo. He was fourth in this group in box score plus minus. He is 21 years old, so he is still super young, and it turned in a tremendous season. We know what he did. He had 16.9 points per game. He averaged 7.7 rebounds, 4.3 assists, 1.2 steals, 1.4 blocks. Really, look, tremendous numbers. 51 from the field. But he turned into a punt free throw-ish guy towards the end as well. He shot 72% from the line over the course of the season, but that dropped significantly on just a shitload of attempts as well. He averaged 5 attempts per game, but again, that did increase when he turned into the point guard. He also shot 26% from 3, which needs to change. But looking at Giannis, we have to look at his rankings. 28th on the season, but post All-Star 14th, and that's sort of where you're going to have to take Giannis in that spot. So do we expect a breakout from him? Yes. Do we expect more of what we saw post All-Star from him? Yes. So he won't be the 28th guy, but you're not getting Giannis outside the top 20. There is no chance you're drafting him outside the top 20. In some cases, you won't be able to draft him outside the top 10. So there's definitely no hidden talent. There's definitely no secret here with Giannis Antetokounmpo. Everyone is going to be going real aggressive on him. It's going to be interesting to see where he comes out in the pre-ranks on Yahoo and ESPN, because in casual leagues, that will determine a lot, and you might be able to snatch him up in the third round. I would be stunned if that is the case, but that is a possibility. And when we talk Giannis, we have to look at the difference between what happened to him before he was anointed the point guard, and we could do that by looking. It was basically All-Star game when that happened, pre and post All-Star. Pre-All-Star, 16-7-3. Post, 19-8.5-7. So they're ridiculous numbers. Yes, he did play an extra 2 minutes per game. He saw his usage jump by 3%. He saw his net rating go from a minus 2 to a plus 7. Huge jump there as well. But the three-point percentage, still a concern. And what I mentioned, he shot 67% from the free throw line in that post All-Star. So really dropped down and did become a real concern. On the amount of attempts he was taking, he was single-handedly ruining free throw percentage for a lot of people. So it is something you're going to have to bear attention to. I think he can improve because he's shown he can be a better free throw shooter than that. But it's not something that you can go in blindly and completely disregard, I don't think. The other interesting thing with looking at Giannis' stats is his home road splits. At home, 18-8-5. On the road, 15.5-7.5-4. So big differences. Plus minus 2.3 at home, negative 8.3 on the road. Now, some of that is a factor of the team, but a real change in his production between home and away. But with Giannis, yes, he'll be better. If people do their ranks based on last season's ranks and he comes out at 28, it's a steal. People won't be that silly. I know you guys listening to this won't be that silly, but people doing other sites' rankings and the default rankings on your big providers, Fantrax, ESPN, Yahoo, they're not going to be as silly to have Giannis sitting that low. It's just not going to be it's not going to be common sense for them anyway. The next player is a player that I do really like, and that's Gorgui Dieng. I don't know what to expect from Dieng this season. He struggled to start the season, mainly Sam Mitchell induced, but once he got going, or once he got starting next to Karl Anthony Towns, which honestly, that sort of pairing was as obvious as a dick on a horse. That's not even a real phrase, but I guess you know what I mean. You had to play them together, and Sam Mitchell just refused. Playing spuds like Tayshaun Prince and Nemanja Bjelica and seriously Nikola Pekovic next to Karl Anthony Towns while letting Dieng rot on the bench. Eventually, he got into the starting lineup, hallelujah, and he started putting up big numbers, and his fantasy numbers responded. He was 30th post-All-Star in 9-cat, 43rd post-All-Star in 8-cat. But would you have the balls to take him inside the top 50 next season? I'd have to say no, because we don't know how Tom Thibodeau is going to treat him. We don't even know if he's going to be on this team. But it's not like the Wolves have got another ready-made power forward on this roster. They didn't draft one. They drafted another point guard in Chris Dunn. So it's not like there's someone that's ready to step in. Now, Tibbs might play Bjelica there. I think that Dieng is going to be the option. And picking him at in the 70s or 80s is probably hedging your bets. But he gets another season as a starter. He's a top 50 guy. He's shown that multiple times throughout his career. And his post All-Star numbers in 30 minutes, he was 11.5, 7.5. He showed a plus 3.6 in his plus minus. A real improvement in what he was able to do. And I'm convinced he's going to be able to start stretching out to hit some threes. He got a really nice stroke. He's a good free throw shooter. And he hit six of them this season. I think he could be a guy that takes it to 20, 25, maybe 30 threes in a season. So he is an interesting guy to me. But he's 26, so he's a little bit older than a lot of this group. He has got a real chance, though, to... Look, new coach, everyone's got an opportunity, but he could break out into becoming a player who is a top 35 guy for the entire season. Yeah, Thibs should like his defense. I'm very interested to see what Jeng does. I'm not, you know, super sold on it because of the uncertainty and what they do in free agency, but he is a guy that does slide under the radar and had a comfortable top 40 second half of the season. Jim Ennis is the next guy that came in, and he looked really red hot to finish the season in New Orleans. Now, where he ends up is anyone's guess at this point. He was a second-round draft choice. He's been in Miami, in Memphis for about 2 seconds, and then ended up in New Orleans and really found his spot. The Pelicans need wings. They need wings who can shoot. They got Buddy Hield, but they need a three. Now, is Ennis that guy? Probably not, but is he better than Dante Cunningham? I'd venture a guess and say probably. Is he better than Quincy Pondexter? Well, Quincy Pondexter, I don't think we can ever rely on his health at this stage with his knees that are just bung every 5 minutes. So Ennis is a guy that I think can take a significant leap. He was, post-All-Star, he was ranked 102nd last season. 102nd. Now, he was playing just a shitload of minutes because the Pelicans could have been trotting out me out there. That's how badly injured they were. And he's not ever going to be a 102nd ranked player. But for some reason, if he has to be forced into 30 minutes a night, and... it means the Dire Straits have hit the Pelicans. This guy can produce, so he's a name to watch. Steve Adams is the next one. He had a massive, massive breakout playoffs. In terms of his season, 133rd in 9-cat, 147th in 8-cat, again showing a real significant improvement post-All-Star and an even bigger improvement in the playoffs. With Serge Ibaka gone, more is going to have to fall into Adams' plate. He will play more minutes, he should be able to get more blocks, and he is a guaranteed... I don't like using that word, but he's a guaranteed top 100 player. Well, let's put it this way. He's guaranteed to go inside the top 100 at this point. Whether he ends there or not remains to be seen, but he's got a real chance to even push into the top 75. Now, like a lot of these guys, free throws is a concern for Big Steve, but he is a guy that the opportunity's there for him. The breakout playoffs is there, and we saw guys like CJ McCollum, who we'll get to later, turn a breakout playoffs into a complete breakout season. This could be the one for Steve. There's an outside chance he is a top 50 player at the end of the season. So he is someone that once it gets into the 80s or 90s, I'd be happy taking a gamble on him and seeing exactly how it pans out. But we're still a little bit unsure how that front court rotation is going to work in Oklahoma City. But Steve Adams is a real interesting target for me. The next player is Steve Adams' new Oklahoma City teammate, and that is Vic Oladipo, a player who you know I am super, super high on. He averaged 16-5-4 last season with 1.6 steals. He was the 34th ranked player, but hold on to your nuts for this, because he was the 9th ranked player post-All-Star. 9th. He was playing a decent amount of minutes, and he was a dead set top 20 player in Orlando this season. Frank Vogel, he doesn't have to deal with Skiles' absolute turdery that he was throwing out there. He was going to be a top 20 guy, and he was going to challenge for the top 15. Now, it's a stretch if he's a top 50 player to me. He might be ranked there. I think there's pretty much zero chance I'm taking him as a third wing wheel behind Westbrook and Durant. Yeah, he will play. He'll play second units, but he really struggled in a sixth man role last season. The Magic were probably a little bit better, but he struggled personally. His per-minute numbers were down in a bench role as opposed to as a starter's role. And I just can't see him being able to play 35 minutes a night. It doesn't seem feasible with guys like Payne, who'll get some extra minutes. And potentially they're bringing back Dion Waiters and then Andre Robertson as well. He's just not going to be able to get those minutes. So it's going to be real tough for me to suggest drafting Oladipo inside the top 50. He was 67th pre-All-Star last year. Again, 9th. Posts, so a really big change, and a lot of that was Skiles just completely stuffing him around to start the season. And I think that that's probably where you're going to have to get him. He will be a classic overdrafter next season, and I want no part of it, despite how good I think he is. And if he was on a team in a different situation, if he was still in Orlando, I'd be smashing the hell out of him inside the top 20, and I'd be going overly aggressive on him, because I don't reckon he'd would have had to have drafted him there, but I would have been keen on taking him in the second round. Now, you'd probably have to look at me in the sixth round before I nod my head and go, yeah, that's probably the right spot to take Vic. Disappointing turn of events for his fantasy dynasty owners, but hey, he finds himself on a better team, absolutely no doubt about that, and maybe he's happy. We'll see what happens. Kevin Durant leaves, it's a whole new ball game. Maybe then he does become a top 25 guy. Probably wouldn't go as high as top 20 with Westbrook around, but there's a chance that he then becomes, and they play Robinson at the three, and then him and Westbrook become the two main guys, and he becomes, you know, back to being that fantasy upper echelon type player. But he was due for an absolutely monster breakout this season, and it is going to be tempered by his new role. Otto Porter, this is an interesting one. Porter was the 60th ranked player last season. I don't think many people would realize that. 78th in 8 cap, but he struggled down the stretch. He was 100th post All-Star break. There was stretches where you basically couldn't own him. This is the time for Porter. He missed his first season, nearly all of it, with hip problems. He struggled immensely his second season. The Wizards aren't bringing anyone in to challenge him. Kevin Durant's not coming. Kelly Oubre struggled last season. He's not taking Porter's minutes. This is really the time that Porter can challenge for a top 40 role next season. If you think that Porter's going to have to be drafted at pick 60, I reckon you're going to be greatly mistaken. He is going to be an 80-ish type player, and I think that he is set for a real big improvement. He shows some talent. He only averaged 11.6 points. He could bump that up significantly. 5 rebounds, 1.6 assists, 1.4 steals, half a block as well, 47%. 37 from 3, 75 from the line, yeah, a nice true shooting of 56% as well. Impressive stuff from Porter, which would, in essence was basically his second season. I think he, out of these guys, he's, excluding Giannis, I think him and Adams are probably the two biggest breakout candidates that we've spoken about so far. The next on the list is Jeff Withey. We know where he is. He's stuck in a backup role in Utah. Not much to talk about there. Andre Robertson had a massive playoff, started hitting threes at a ludicrous rate. Is that real? Probably not. We'll be looking at Andre Robertson as being a fantasy relevant player in standard leagues. Probably not. He was 200th last season, so your deeper leagues do have to pay attention. And he's going to get a role because he's that good of a defender. And if you can start hitting threes, you're going to get block shots, you're going to get steals, you're going to get high rebounds, and you're going to get threes. And there's a case to be made that he could find himself sneaking inside the top 150. I don't think that's a complete crazy thing to say, but with Oladipo on board, unless they move him completely down to the four, which again, they could to take some of Serge Ibaka's minutes, then Robertson might be in a bit of a squeeze there too. But of course, Waiters could go. You know, Randy Foy might not be back. So there's going to be minutes, and he's a key piece of what they do. An absolutely huge piece, despite how middling his stats might look. He's obviously a very effective player and a real key figure for what they want to do. He shot a crazy percentage from the field, if I have a look. Yeah, 50%, and he shot 61% on his two-point attempts. He didn't do much with it, 4.8 points, and he didn't shoot all that often, but there's a chance that you could find Andre Robertson inside the top 50. I need to get a siren or something for this. It's Josh's boyfriend alert. Kelly Olynyk is on deck now. He was 142nd ranked player last season. He was 150th in 8 cat leagues, suffered a shoulder problem, which kept him out, and we knew how frustrating both he could be and Brad Stevens could be when dealing with that center rotation. Now, Ante Zizic might be coming across. Gershon Yabesele probably isn't coming across. Salinger's most likely gone. Zeller's most likely gone. Is this the season that Stevens goes, Kelly, let's get to it. Let's play 30 minutes, and let's see what you can do. Because if he plays 30 minutes, you lock him in. He's a top 50 player. It's going to happen. He barely played last season. He played 20 minutes a game and still cracked the top 150. You put him at 30, he is extraordinarily underrated. I feel he's a legit three-point shooter, shot 41%. He hits free throws. He blocks. He can block shots. He can pass. He can rebound the ball. He can score. He's the most versatile of all their big men. He should be getting a bigger role in 20 minutes a night, and this is the opportunity for him. This is the fourth season of Kelly Olynyk. This is the time for him to really stand up and for Brad Stevens to show more trust in him. And again, that is tough because in all the seasons we've seen Brad Stevens in Boston, not once has he ever shown trust in a big man, and that is a concern. Yeah, he's fine to throw the little men out there 35 minutes, but never will he throw a big man out there and play them not only solid minutes, but a consistent role. And that is the concern with Olynyk, but he'll be, you won't have to take him inside the top 50, not even close. You probably won't have to take him inside the top 100, but he's a great pick for the last couple of rounds because, boom, if he gets out there and plays 30 minutes, you have got yourself a legit fantasy talent who's got triple one potential. So keep an eye on Kelly Olynyk. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Stan Johnson's going to get some extra minutes. Is it going to come at Caldwell-Pope's expense? Is it going to come at Marcus Morris's expense? Or is Johnson just going to sort of sit tight at 23 minutes? It's undecided, but we know that Stan Van Gundy loves Caldwell-Pope. He's given him multiple green lights to just shoot as much as possible. And last season was his best year. He was 86th in NICAT and 94th in 8CAT leagues. Still... Yeah, needs to work on his shooting. 31% from three. He can get that to 35 or 36, then he becomes a tremendous, tremendous fantasy asset. He scored 14.5 points a game. He knocked in 1.5 threes a game. He'd get you almost four rebounds, almost two assists, and 1.5 steals. And turning his impressive on-ball defense into impressive fantasy defensive numbers is something that does take a couple of seasons, and we did see that happen for Caldwell-Pope. Is he a prime guy for a bump? I don't think he ever becomes a top 50 player, if I'm looking at it honestly. But you could see him move from 86 to becoming a top 70 player. I think that's not too much of a stretch. Again, I'm not going through all these players. I've got a couple more of this main group that I want to touch on. The next one I want to get to is Cody Zeller. Big Cody Zeller fan. Many people aren't. Fair enough. And I thought he was clearly the best big man on the Hornets last season. That's if you don't include Marvin Williams as a big man. I'm talking center. He was much more efficient than what Al Jefferson is, a much better defender than what Al Jefferson is. And Al Jefferson is likely not to be back given the salary cap crunch this team has got with all its free agents. Zeller will be back. Zeller will be the starting center, and Zeller will play more than 24 minutes a game. I am fairly certain of that. Now, he averaged only 8.7 points per game, 6 rebounds, 0.9 blocks, 0.8 steals, 53 and 75, so really good percentages. He can stretch it out a little bit and hit threes. He only hit 10% of them and on very few attempts, but it is something that is, you know, potential to be worked on. It might take another 4 years from here for Zeller to do that, but he can do it. And he plays 27 minutes a night, then he becomes, or even 30 minutes a night is a real possibility for him. He becomes someone you want in standard leagues. Is he someone who really takes a big step forward? No, but from 103rd, and 131 in 8CAT leagues, you could easily find him at 75th, 80th, that sort of rank. And this is a real big season for him. The stars are aligning in terms of opportunity opening. We know Steve Clifford's preference for him, aside from the last couple of games in the playoffs, and that was truly matchup-based. If Jefferson's not there, then, you know, it's not going to be Frank Kaminsky that's going to be playing the minutes. It's not going to be Spencer Hawes. It's going to be Zeller. So really keep an eye on him. The next player, Nerlens Noel, one of the youngest players in this class. It is only his third season because he missed that first one recovering from an ACL injury. You're really an elite fantasy prospect. He was only 57th last season. It was a down year for him. But after the first couple of months of struggles, when Ish Smith arrived, there was a stretch, I think for about 2 or 3 weeks in January, where he was like the third ranked player in fantasy. Not many players, and by not many, I mean basically none, have the potential to be 2 steals and 2 blocks per game. He almost did that in his first season. He went 1.8, 1.5 this season. In fact, post All-Star in his rookie year, he was over 2 steals and 2 blocks per game. He improved his field goal percentage tremendously up to 52. He averaged 11 points and 8 rebounds. The problem with Noel is his future. Is he going to stay in Philadelphia? Is Joel Embiid taking minutes off him? Simmons, Saric, Okafor, who's taking the minutes in this front court? That is the concern. We know that he's got more trade value than what Jahlil Okafor does, so he might go to a team like Boston and, you know, be subject to Brad Stevens' annoying rotations. But he could go somewhere and become a starting center. And if he's playing 30 minutes a night, then he's a top 50 player. It's as simple as that. But to me, there's a real concern with Noel in terms of what his role is going to be next season. Will he be able to play 29 minutes a game? You would have to say on the surface, not a chance if things remain the same, because you know, Jahlil's going to play. Joel's going to play probably only 15 minutes a night for Embiid, but that's still enough. Simmons is going to get his 29. Saric is going to get his 18 to 20 minutes, and these are all really early predictions, but someone's missing out, and Noel is not playing 29 minutes if he remains in Philadelphia and if everyone remains in Philadelphia, and that is the concern. But once he gets an open shot at 30 minutes, then there's a lot of fantasy value. I don't think that ever comes in Philadelphia because, you know, assuming Joel Embiid can stay healthy, him and Simmons are 1 and 2. They're the starting 4 and 5, and Noel is the backup, and Okafor and Saric, who knows where they sort of fit at this point. So Noel needs a change of scenery for him to remain as a fantasy top 50 player. I wouldn't be against trading him away in a dynasty if you're able to get close to top 60 value back, because I get the feeling that the downside or the downslope of Noel's career is coming, and that's not entirely his fault. I really value him. I think he's a tremendous defender and a real high potential guy, but not as high as Embiid and not as high as Simmons. He needs to go somewhere else, but there is a risk he goes somewhere else, starts, plays 30 minutes and burns you. So really consider that. But you know, if he was to play 30 minutes, then I'd have him inside the top 40. I think that's where I view him. The next guy, and you've noticed I've spoken about 15 players out of this group who had better box score plus minuses than last season's most improved player, and that is CJ McCollum. Now, McCollum was great. He put up 21 points a game. He had 3 rebounds, 4 assists, 1.2 steals. He shot 45 from the field. He shot 42 from 3. But defensively, he's atrocious. And a box score plus minus, which is 0.4, is obviously not impressive. There is a chance that this season and next season are McCollum's best years in the NBA. I could be wrong. But I think that as the Blazers get better and get more talent, he's not going to be afforded to have that many shots. He's not going to be afforded to be that piss weak on defense. And he was the 44th ranked player, 31st in 8-cat this year. Would I take him at 31? Probably not. I wouldn't hate it. I wouldn't hate taking him at the end of the third round. But at 31... probably not. He's had his breakout, and that was a lot opportunity fueled. He also took a big step in what he was able to do, so all his per minute numbers jumped up extraordinarily high, and took full advantage of that role. But wouldn't be shocked if this season that we just had and the next season are the best two seasons fantasy wise in his career, and then maybe he settles as a guy who's a top 65 player. And that's not bad. And he has, you know, 4 or 5 seasons inside the top 75. That's all right. But I don't know. I just get the feeling that we're seeing peak McCollum at the moment. And as the team improves and as other better players come onto the team, his offensive role shrinks a little bit. And the defense maybe gets exposed a little bit more. Just a theory. Something to look at. If someone is coming to you with a trade and thinking CJ McCollum's a top 20 player, then I go, cool, you have him, I'll have that top 20 asset back. And this is another thing that I want to mention now. If you're in dynasty leagues, the 2007 draft, the top 10 players in that draft are probably equal to Ben Simmons. They might even be better than him. So if you're a middle of the road, maybe pushing for the playoffs team, tank. Get worse. Acquire 2017 draft choices. Harry Lyles, Josh Jackson, Jason Tatum, and Dennis Smith, Lonzo Ball, De'Aaron Fox. These are guys, and these are players at positions that are hard to get. Wings and guards. There's some tantalizing talent coming into this next draft. So if your team's strong, your team's strong. But if you're towards the bottom, or maybe you got a few older players on your team and it's starting to drift, load up on 2017 draft picks. I wouldn't be shocked if the Blazers didn't make the playoffs next season. Maybe they fall into the lottery. Maybe they get a top three pick. Maybe it's a wing. And then that's where I see the McCollum drift start to happen a bit. We'll see. Reggie Bullock. This is a real opportunity for Reggie Bullock. Jody Meeks, he's been injured his two seasons in Detroit. Bullock, it looked good. He was 180th post-All-Star. He was 345th for the season, so that's a big jump. He was just a complete non-factor in Los Angeles. He did nothing in Phoenix, obviously, and arrived in Detroit and was looking much of the same, but really started to put it together at the end of the season, and I thought had a pretty good season. Is he ever going to be a top 50 player? No, I don't think so. Could he have a top 100 season? Maybe, if things go right. But this is an opportunity for him to slide into the primary backup two-guard role. They still don't have a backup point guard, Detroit. He'll be battling with Darren Hilliard. I think that Hilliard's good, but I do think that Bullock is better. And Bullock shot the ball fairly well last season, 44% from the field, 42% from three. And that is really something that Stan Van Gundy will enjoy, having a guy hitting 42% of his threes. He could find himself in that backup role. They maybe move Stan Johnson more to the backup three or starting three. And I think you'll see a little bit more from Bullock. Definitely more than the 12 minutes and 37 games that he played this season. 12 minutes per game, 37 games. I think you see a little bit more out of Reggie next season. And he is primed for a jump. Solomon Hill inexplicably had his rookie option declined. I'm sure you've heard that plenty of times on plenty of podcasts. He will not be in Indiana. He showed his versatility in the playoffs, but he's not a fantasy asset. He had a pretty average season, 282nd this year, 303 and 8 Carter. He had the chance to replace Paul George the year before and didn't do much. I think if he had the opportunity to replace Paul George again next season, you would find him in the top 100. He's a solid rebounder. He hits threes, and he hit them at a tremendous rate in the playoffs. Really good free throw shooter, good defender, gets steals, can block shots as well. Depending on where he ends up in free agency, there's a potential for him to sneak inside the top 150, but probably not. That's all the players who had positive box score plus minuses out of this class. There's a couple of other names that I want to go through just to touch on here. Dennis Schroeder. He was a negative 1.4 box score plus minus. He is a top 50 player next season. There is no doubt in my mind. He was 217th for the season, 154th in 8-cat leagues, but he's starting. And he's playing 30 minutes. He's going to score. He's going to get assists. He's going to hit threes. He's going to hit free throws. He's going to get steals. He's going to be a top 50 player. Now, you might feel a bit hesitant to bite the bullet on him, and so might everyone else. And his ADP might reflect that, and he might be at 75, and that means I will have Dennis Schroeder on every one of my teams. He is a top 50 player in a starting role. I could feel really, really dumb April next year when I look back to think about this, but I'm convinced that this is a great time for him. Trey Burke and Michael Carter-Williams, I don't think they're going to have any spot in standard leagues. We'll see with Carter-Williams what the Bucks do. Yes, we know Giannis is going to be handling the ball, but do they play Carter-Williams as the other player on the court in the traditional point guard position? But he can't hit threes. They want Jared Bayless or someone like that who can hit threes. But Carter Williams' defense is quite handy, but I'm pretty sure we've seen the best of Carter Williams, and that was that first season in Philadelphia. He won't be getting better than that. Trey Burke, similar. He lost his spot completely in the rotation. Now with healthy Dante Exum and George Hill, there's almost nothing for Trey Burke there. Shane Larkin, it all depends on what the Nets do at their point guard spot, but he will be a standard league draftable guy if he is the starter going in. And two more players that I really want to touch on here. One of them is, I've just lost who I'm talking, Ben McLemore. Really got stuffed around by George Karl last season, finished 301st last year, down from 131st. He just couldn't find any consistent playing time. Dave Yeager might get something out of him. He is a waiver watch guy, probably not a draftable player. They took away Marco Bellinelli, who was getting some of those shooting guard minutes. I don't think they're going to give them straight to Malachi Richardson, because they're going to find out pretty early on that Malachi Richardson's not that good and definitely can't shoot. This is McLemore's in that perfect spot, fourth year breakout. This is him. Whoa, where's this Ben McLemore meet? What's happened here? Can he play now? Can he shoot? Can he? Because he can rebound. He can shoot. He can pass okay. He can defend okay. He just needs belief, and he had none of that last season. He is a real sneaky player to me, and I don't think I'd be drafting him, but I'd be really keeping an eye on him, and anything deeper than 12, I probably would take a last pick on him. The next one of those is Alex Len. Now, with Bender and Marquise Chris coming across to Phoenix, hopefully Earl Watson doesn't feel the need to play him completely out of position, ruin his field goal percentage, and plays him at center ahead of Tyson Chandler. Now, whether he does that or not remains to be seen. If he's playing ahead of Tyson Chandler and he's playing as a center, the field goal percentage, which is what took him so low in the rankings last season, will be alleviated. He'll go back to that 48 to 52% range. He blocks shots. He can rebound. I think he's a really good player. I think he can become a really good player, and this is his opportunity as well. So he is in a real good spot here to have that fourth-year breakout as well. But we need to sort of read the tea leaves of what the Suns are doing with Tyson Chandler. But Len is primed. He could be a top 75 player next season, assuming that he gets played in the correct manner. Just goes through some of the other players in this draft class now. Anthony Bennett, he's not on a team. Who else have we got here? Shabazz Muhammad, Thibodeau is going to hate him. He can't defend. He was one of the worst players last season. He's not going to play much. Sergei Karasev, don't know if he's going to be on a team. Tony Snell, useless. Tim Hardaway Jr., now he is a possibility for a bit of a breakout. If Kent Bazemore goes, there's some minutes opening up for him, and he could be the next beneficiary. So he is a name to watch, especially in preseason. Olivier Jean-Charles, I mentioned he's coming across this season. Don't have high hopes for him, but he is a tremendous shot blocker as a small forward. Archie Goodwin, I think the ship is sailed on him. Nemanja Nedovic doesn't play in the league anymore. Alan Crabb, a second-year player who's heading into restricted free agency this season. He is a player who could challenge for the top 100, so he is a name to watch for. It depends where he goes and what situation that he is in. Isaiah Cannon, Carrick Felix, Glenn Rice, Ray McCallum, Tony Mitchell, Nate Walters, Grant Jarrett, Jamal Franklin, Ricky Lito, Mike Muscala, Eric Green, Raul Neto, Ryan Kelly, Eric Murphy, Lorenzo Brown, Joffrey Lovrenier, and Peyton Siever. They're the other players in this draft. That's that draft class done. I think we covered all that. What I'm going to do now is go to the questions that you guys have submitted, and these questions come courtesy of Fan Essentials. How would you like to get all of your favorite NBA teams merchandise delivered straight to your doorstep? Check out fanessentials.net, and all you do is pick your favorite sports team, and every month you get your team's gear shipped right to your door. They find the sports gear so you don't have to, and each fan box comes packed full of some amazing gear. It makes a great gift idea for any sports fan. Prices start at just $34.99, but you visit fanessentials.net and use the promo code REDROCK at checkout and get 30% off your first month. Visit fanessentials.net and get all the essentials you need. I'm also going to be choosing the weekly winner of the Fan Essentials 1 month free trial. So I'll be doing that soon. But let's get to the questions that you guys sent in. Joseph Diffenbach says, which under the radar pick from this class will have a CJ McCollum like leap from nearly out of nowhere? Dennis Schroeder doesn't count. Of course Schroeder counts. He was way down the rankings. He's going to be a top 50 guy. The guys, I think Ben McLemore is a pretty decent guy to put a wager on. It's unlikely to happen, but it definitely could. Steve Adams and Otto Porter, a guy. But you know, Porter, again, was a top 60 guy in NICAT League. So, yeah, Kelly Olynyk maybe as well. Next question. Lost my questions. Now, there we go. Van Burf says, beside Giannis, who do we expect to take that next step forward toward fantasy elite? I don't think McCollum takes a big leap forward. Gobert, I think, can reclaim his spot in that area. As it mentioned, Schroeder. There's quite a bit of talent in this draft class that we didn't really realize, I suppose, when it was actually drafted or at the end of that first season. Next question. Beben on Twitter at BebenBadass. Can you rank these four-year players on a dynasty point of view? Otto Porter, Alex Len, Steven Adams, and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. I think that's a really good question. Can I rank them? It depends on what you're doing. You got two wings and you got two big men. So you might have plenty of bigs. You might be punting threes. It really depends on what you're doing, and it does every one of these questions. But in terms of overall upside, I think Len has the probably highest upside, but least likely to attain it. If I'm picking these guys now, I'd probably go Porter, Adams, Len, KCP. Yeah, that's probably the way I look at it. But they are really close to each other. The next question. Beben again. Can Olynyk become finally fantasy relevant? Yeah, I don't put much trust in Brad Stevens doing that, though. That's the concern. And he says, I'm overall quite surprised at how this draft class has improved. And that's something to think about when you talk about this draft class and the weakness of it. In 3 years' time, we'll be pretty happy with it, I think. Sam Philp says, which players are being held back by lack of opportunity? Kelly Linick is the number one that's screaming out there. To me, he gets 30 minutes a night. He'll be a real player. And James Ennis, to a degree, is being held back, and so is Bebe. I think if Bebe got playing time, he'd be a top 100 player as well. All right, we're done. Guys, that is the podcast done. I'll be back with Matt Smith to look at some breakout candidates and get his thoughts on the draft in a couple of days' time. And then free agency opens, which I'm sure you're all really looking forward to. Again, we'll be doing some free agency reviews before I head off to the United States and tackle that holiday, which you know, I'm looking forward to because it is extraordinarily freezing here, and I'm looking forward to 40-degree days in Vegas. And I know some of you might not know what the hell I'm talking about with that temperature. I think it's 110 in Vegas, so it is bloody hot. Looking forward to it. Can't wait. Really enjoy the heat. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.